Hello and welcome to Newsmakers on CHCH Podcasts. I'm Louis Butko, and today we're discussing the recently tabled Ontario provincial budget. And to do that, I'm very pleased to be joined by CHCH Queen's Park producer Randy Rath. And Randy, this was what, your third, fourth, fifth time covering a budget? You've only been doing this a couple years, right?
Actually, this one was my 42nd. I've been around a long time, and you know, budget lockups haven't been the same since they stopped us from smoking in them.
You started CHCH in 1981. You mentioned you've been through a lot. Just take us through the process of budget day, because you know, a lot of people turned on their news at 6 o'clock and obviously realized it was a big day. Al Sweeney was live from Queen's Park. You know, the finance minister was on the show. But at Queen's Park, budget day is a big deal.
Well, budget day has evolved because of COVID. It used to be they had this giant room, and they would lock us all up, like literally lock us up so that we couldn't get out with any of the budget documents. We were guarded by the OPP. They wouldn't let us leave the room, even if we didn't have the documents with us. Now it's evolved to the point where they give us remote access to the budget documents, and we still gather in a room for the press conference. Mm-hmm. So what happens is you get the budget early in the morning, like 8 o'clock, you sit there, you go through it. Some guy comes in and does a technical briefing, and you can ask him technical questions. Like, for instance, this year we're talking about the new helicopters for the police. And, you know, we said, well, they're for GTA. Like, who's going to control them? And it turns out the OPP is going to control them. So I guess we're going to have an Air Force in the OPP now. But anyhow, then you get to go back to your office, eat some pizza. You know, sort of hang out, kick the thing around our office. And then there's a press conference with the finance minister. Al went to that. That's about 1:30, I think. And then the opposition leaders come in. And then Al comes racing back to the camera to the office. And we cram a story together. We just bang the thing together. And then before you know it, Al's on live and the whole thing's over with.
Now, when you're taking a look at this budget, you know, back in the day, the embargoed budget, but when you're taking a look, what jumps out at you? Because obviously there are things that the government wants you to read and wants you to report about. So they'll include a page of highlights. But how do you criticize or research a document that you just get? It's a quick turnaround.
Oh, it's absolutely a quick turnaround. And to a certain extent, you have to take what they're telling you as being true. And, you know, mostly it is. And they do supply experts that we can, you know, ask questions of. Like if there's housing policy, we can ask the housing policy experts, what the hell does this mean? And then, you know, the minister comes in and the minister will honestly answer our questions. And then the opposition will poke holes in those, in what the government is saying. And it is a very quick turnaround, and sometimes we really don't know exactly what the policy is that they're talking about, because there's not room in the document for all of the detail that's involved.
And that's what that question and answer period is. You mentioned that the helicopters, I'll let our listeners know, $46 million in the budget over 3 years to purchase 4 helicopters for OPP and also provide additional resources to surveil roadways and catch street racers, impair drivers, and help curb automotive theft. Let's get in, not the nitty-gritty of the budget, but no real big announcements, no real big tax cuts. And for a government that doesn't have to run again for a few years, this is kind of what we were expecting, was it not?
Yeah, it's what we call a midterm budget. And we really weren't expecting anything big. I mean, they announced their main planks moving in the weeks before the budget, like the $1.5 billion, I think it was, for infrastructure for cities to build sewers and water supplies to make it easier for them to build housing. The government wanted to theme this budget as making it more affordable for people who live in the province. And, you know, right off the top of his budget speech, the minister was talking about how the world has changed and it's the most unaffordable that it's been in, well, ever in the province history, is what he was saying. And it's their main themes tried to address that.
Yeah, and I mean, when you look at this, it's a $214.5 billion budget. it's that deficit that's jumping out to a lot of people. This was a government that has been sitting for quite a few years now, a term and a half, that always attacked the Liberals over their high deficits. Are you surprised by the lack of ink that's being used to highlight the deficit and where they're at right now in spending?
Well, you know, over the last year, interest rates have gone up, and they've really incurred a lot of expenditures that they didn't think they were going to have. Like, you know, a year ago in last year's budget, they thought that there would be a $200 million deficit in this year's budget. Well, now it's $9 billion. So that's a lot of money. And you know, part of it could be attributed to Bill 124 being deemed unconstitutional in the court and the government having to pay out $6 billion towards that. But there's been all sorts of payments that they've had to make because interest rates are up and because, you know, our population has grown immensely over the last couple of years. And it's understandable that the spending is the biggest that it's ever been for a fiscal year in the province.
They have promised, not surprisingly, to run a balanced budget by 2025-2026. I noticed that in the notes as they plan on being back to balanced books before the next election. What did jump out at you at this one? We mentioned the helicopters. That's obviously just something that it's pretty interesting. $46 million for four helicopters. But what caught your eye when you were flipping through this yesterday?
Well, just to go back a sec, the year that they say they're going to be in balance is the year after the next election. So they're admitting, like, hey, we can't fix this, and I doubt they'll be back in balance the year after the election. I don't think we're ever going to see a balanced budget unless there's some phenomenal growth in economic prosperity in the province. But what grabbed my attention was it's just the little things that they tried to do, like the elimination of the gas tax. You know, that's like, what they say, $300 a year for the average family that's buying a tank of gas a week. Well, since they started that to when they're going to end it, which they won't do next fall, it's going to cost the provincial coffers $5 billion. You could do a lot with $5 billion. That's a huge amount of money. And it's the type of thing that, you know, people are unwilling. They want to save money. They want to, they want to, you know, not be nickel and dimed. But the thing is, those nickels and dimes really add up. And, you know, people want good health care, good schools, good roads. They want everything, but they don't really seem to want to pay for it.
Yeah. And I mean, it's another thing for drivers. We've talked about this, that it seems like Doug Ford loves rewarding people who drive their cars. He wants to build more highways and improve transit. He took away the registration for stickers. What is this government's fascination with drivers? And do you find that might hurt them when you know, at a time people are pushing public transit, it seems like it's drivers, auto insurance rates being cut, that that seem to be benefiting most from at least this one this year?
Well, they're still spending a lot of money, unprecedented amounts of money on public transit. They're building transit lines all over the place. They're getting all-day GO service to Niagara Falls and to Milton. And, you know, the bottom line is money. The government doesn't look, the Ford government doesn't look at, you know, voters as they look at them as people that are going to donate to their campaigns. So they've essentially written off the people in downtown Toronto because they're pretty much not going to vote for the Tories no matter what. But the people in the suburbs, the people that use the highways, are the people that are going to vote for them. And they're also the people, more importantly to the government, the people that will donate to their campaigns. So, you know, if you live in, you know, out in the burbs where, you know, Milton, you know, outer Mississauga, Hamilton now is basically a suburb of Toronto. And those are the people that will vote for the Tories, and they're the ones that want roads. So he has to supply that. And also, there's so many trucks on the road now that you need more roads. So you need capacity to get goods to and fro and to let the economy function.
Yeah. My thing is, I drive the Burlington Skyway every day. I didn't see any money towards easing that congestion. So I know he wants to build the 413, but even Niagara to the GTA, you know, I would like to see some money earmarked there in the next few years because that drive is undrivable.
Well, hey, they're twinning the Garden City Skyway.
I'm never stuck on the Garden City Highway or the Garden City Skyway, Randy. I'm stuck literally every day on the Burlington Skyway.
Well, I know, and I mean, I've done that drive a lot too. I've driven in from Niagara to Toronto a lot, and it's crazy.
It is.
I don't know what to do. I mean, Louis, you can't very well build another Skyway. Like, you can't twin that thing. I mean, what they're trying to do is get more people into transit. And, you know, now the trains that are coming from Niagara, they're hardly used. Mm. But as a transportation minister a few years ago said to me, well, you have to have the train in place, and it takes years so that people recognize it as a viable option to driving their cars. People like to drive their cars in this province. And you know, the further you are, like if you're commuting in from Niagara Falls every day, it's probably faster for you to drive your car, even with the traffic, than it is to take the trains and mess around.
Yeah. Oh, you're definitely right there. And if we ever get those high-speed GO trains, I'm sure it'll be a lot different. Let's talk about the opposition's response, the Liberals' response. What did you take away from the criticisms thrown by Leader Stiles or Leader Crombie yesterday? Anything out of the ordinary? I mean, it's kind of what we were expecting. The NDP seemed to be going really hard at the lack of health care discussion in this budget.
Yeah, I don't think they liked it, to be honest.
Bold statement, Randy.
I'm a genius. What they were saying is that it's overall, I mean, there's some money. There's like $500 million going to hospitals to you know, maintain infrastructure. There's money going to local health teams, you know, those what they've been trying to build all over the province. But overall, the increased expenditure on healthcare is only 1.4%, and that's less than the rate of inflation. And that's what the opposition was really pointing out. Like, hey, this is actually a takeaway. This isn't, you're not increasing spending, you're taking it away when you count in inflation. And we have huge problems in the healthcare system. Like, there's simply not enough nurses. There's not enough doctors. Now they're saying that they're going to build a new medical school at York University. It's controlled by York University, and this year they're only spending $9 million on it, which isn't a lot of money. That's a planning phase. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they're going to train family doctors because there's like I think it's 3.1 million people in the province that don't have a family doctor. It's outrageous. And that itself overburdens the emergency wards, and it's a tough deal. I mean, the opposition is essentially saying, you know, we want you to spend a ton of money to fix things, but we don't want you to raise anybody's taxes. And that's what the Tories said when they first came in. You know, we're going to fix things, and, you know, you're not going to have to pay that much more, and we're going to make the system perfect. Well, every government says that, and it's, you know, a combination of they're lying to us and they don't really understand the fiscal circumstance and how difficult it is to really fix problems in the province. So, you know, every government that's ever been elected has says this fantasy that we're going to make things better, but you're not going to have to pay for it. And you know, it's impossible to do. How are you supposed to do that? It's not going to work. And, you know, Merrick Stiles could promise the world, Bonnie Crombie could promise the world, but when they get in, they're going to be hit with the reality that Doug Ford is now being hit with, that it's really difficult to fix the big problems in our society.
But in the same week, we see, you know, what the opposition will call a cut in healthcare funding. We get stories coming out saying how temporary nursing agencies, which are necessary, we need to have nurses in hospitals, but temporary, you know, healthcare employees got paid $1 billion last year when our own nurses can't be fully staffed. Like, how much of a issue do you think healthcare is going to be for the Ford government in 2026? Because like I said, I think the NDP have made it very clear that's what they're going to be running on in the next 2 years. Crombie seems like she's going to go after him for housing. This fourplex comment, that's four stories, whatever, you know, that's going to stick with him. Like, that's kind of a 1-2 punch from the opposition. How do you see the Ford government fighting back against that, and can they be effective?
Well, to be fair, they have spent quite a bit of money building hospitals. There's hospital builds going on all over the place. But at the same time, there's not enough staff. And the temporary workers, like, they're making far more money than nurses that work within the system that are like staff nurses. And the nursing agencies will go out and recruit those people. Sorry about that. My phone's just ringing.
You're a popular guy, man.
Yeah. It's probably the premier. But anyhow, they're going to have to get a handle on that. And I don't know how they're going to do it. I mean, the staff, temporary nurses, agency nurses have become so entrenched in our system now that, you know, nurses can make a whole lot more money working for one of these agencies and get better shifts. So how are they going to convince people to not go and work for one of those agencies? I don't know. It's a very difficult problem, but they're going to have to figure out how to do it, or it could cost them the election.
Yeah. Let's talk about the election. 2026, it is a few years away, but we know who will be running in it. Nothing's going to happen to Stiles. You know, Crombie is going forward. How do you see even the next year playing out? Now that this budget is tabled, what's the priority for the Ford government? And what do you see that, you know, Bonnie Crombie doing to try and, you know, bring the Liberals back into relevance? Because it seems clear by the amount of times Doug Ford mentions her name unprompted that there is some concern about her and what she could do. But how do you see that kind of battling out for the next year or so go down?
She has clearly gotten under his skin. So they have to have, the Tories, have to have polling that shows that Bonnie is a significant threat to them. She is right now, you know, going around the province rebuilding riding associations, you know, connecting with people. I think that her desire to do that overrode her desire to have a seat in the House because she's not going to run in Milton in the Milton by-election. I think that they really see Bonnie as a threat, even more so than Merritt Stiles, because a lot of the people that voted for Merritt Stiles this last election weren't necessarily voting for her. They were voting against the previous premier, Kathleen Wynne, because Wynne had worn out her time. The Liberals had worn out their time. So, you know, Stiles won a lot of stuff because of Wynne. And that hung over into the second Tory term. There was still this visceral dislike of the Liberals. And now that may be changing. But the one thing that we really have to keep our eye on, what are the RCMP going to do about this investigation into Ford's handling of the Greenbelt? I mean, you could very well have, you know, not necessarily cabinet ministers being charged by the police, but some of their staffers could be. Like, we really don't know yet, and they're taking their time. The cops are real thorough when they do something like this. And the what happened during the Greenbelt stuff and you know, giving land, allowing Ford's buddies that were at his daughter's wedding to develop parts of the Greenbelt, it smells to high heaven. And, you know, if somebody in his government gets charged, then that's a significant blow to him. And I'm also not completely convinced that Doug will run again. If he looks at it and thinks, man, I could lose this thing, he still has a lot of time where he could, decide I'm not going to run again, and the Tories will have a leadership convention. That's yet to be seen. We don't know.
You brought up the Greenbelt, and, you know, you're in Queen's Park. There's a lot of reporters who are coming through. There's a lot of, did you hear this? Did you hear that? How much of the word Greenbelt around Queen's Park, like, is it whispered? Is it yelled? I mean, how much of that, you mentioned the RCMP investigation, but how much of the Greenbelt we know they want to push on, but how much is it still talked about in the halls of Queen's Park?
It still is. I mean, the Tories are pretty worried about it. And, you know, quite often at Queen's Park, like it is talked about a lot, but there's a bubble around Queen's Park. And if you're inside that bubble, things concern you that wouldn't necessarily concern people outside of the bubble. And I don't know, you're better to tell me than I am to tell you, how much of a concern the Greenbelt is to the greater public. Like, is it just the people that we see protesting that are the same people that are protesting pretty much at every protest? Or is there an overall societal public view that, you know, this Greenbelt is sacrosanct and shouldn't be developed? It's really hard to say. But, yeah, the Greenbelt is still people are really interested in what's going to happen there at Queen's Park. It's very important.
The one thing I was looking at with this budget was housing. I don't see a lot of things, you know, when it comes to housing. There was a rental housing relief. Municipalities can charge less property taxes for new purpose-built rental apartments. But for a government that has been preaching 1.5 million homes by 2030, 1.5 million homes, you've heard that number 1.5 million times, Randy. How does this government attack housing? How do they make housing affordability a priority? Because based on this budget, it didn't seem like this is a government that's prioritizing 1.5 million homes.
Well, the government hasn't really ever defined what an affordable home is. And, you know, it's sure you can supply all the infrastructure that you want, but the way that homes are built in the province, they're built by developers. And developers are not going to build homes that are going to be truly affordable to the public. You know, rentals and home ownership has gone really badly. I mean, there's people in this province that make 70 grand a year, and they can't afford an apartment and food. So, you know, something has to give. And, you know, there's been calls by the NDP and by the Greens to have purpose-built affordable housing built by a government agency, not by developers who are motivated by profit and that's it. And that's the way that it is with developers. They're not going to build a home that costs, you know, $400,000 or $500,000. It's just not going to happen. So I think that the government has to get into the business of building homes like they did after the war, after the Second World War. They, you know, Calandra talks about we need a wartime effort to build homes. Well, you're talking through your hat, Mr. Calandra, because you're expecting developers to do that. If you're truly going to have a wartime home building project, the government is going to have to be the contractor that builds those houses. And, you know, a couple of months ago, maybe three, Ford was talking about having a $500,000 homes with a backyard, a finished basement, and you know, a driveway, and these things would be readily available to everyone. Well, sometimes the guy just says whatever pops into his head, and he thinks the person in front of him wants to hear, because there's been no mention of that essentially since he said it, and it, you know, it's a fantasy. Yeah. So you know, you have to take what Mr. Ford says a lot of time with a grain of salt, because he just talks off the cuff. The other day he was talking about, we're going to build, you know, as many prisons as it takes to keep the bad guys off the streets for as long as is needed. So I thought, well, what is he talking about? So I called up his office, and they sent me to Corrections. And Corrections said, well, he's talking about two builds, one in Thunder Bay and one someplace else up north that are already happening. So they, you know, they basically poo-poo what the guy is saying.
So how do we take him seriously as a politician right now? He's the premier of our province. What do we take seriously when he opens his mouth? How do we as the public, I mean, through you as Queen's Park, you're doing the work to make sure what he's saying is accurate, and even when it's not, finding the corrections. What do we do? How do we become people watching this show who aren't at Queen's Park? How do we become more informed citizens to know what's true and what's false out of the premier's mouth?
Well, you just, when he starts to talk grandiose things, you take it with a grain of salt. When the guy says we're going to build as many prisons as we can, you know, well, no, you're not. And when he talks about we're going to build $500,000 homes that are standalone places, well, no, you're not. So you just have to take everything with a grain of salt and really look at it and you know, listen, sadly, to us to see what we can discern is real or not.
Well, that's what we're here for, right? That's what we're here for.
Yeah, exactly. You know, a lot of people don't want to acknowledge that anymore. But we don't go on the air spewing out propaganda. We fact check stuff, and we try to tell the truth whenever possible. And sometimes when you're dealing with politicians, you can't just verbatim say what they've said because it's baloney. But I see that happening a lot now.
So you've worked at Queen's Park. We talked about this. You worked at Queen's Park, you know, a while. You've been through 9 different premiers. You know the way it operates. It's something about this conservative government seems it is very hard to get someone to talk to you, an MPP, somebody to go on camera. It's usually a response. It's usually an email. Has that always been the case? Have they always avoided trying to talk to us? Because it does seem like with this government, you know, I've reached out to have the premier on this show. He was the only Ontario leader who declined the invitation. I have difficulties trying to get conservative MPPs on this show. It just seems like they're making it harder for us to talk to them. Is that... You've been there a while. Is that the case, or am I overthinking this?
Yeah, that is the case. I mean, you know, even Mike Harris, every day after question period, he would come out and talk to us. Ford never comes out after question period. It's got to be a structured press conference where they're in control. They'll give us one question, one follow-up. That's it. We got to line up. And also, a lot of times the MPPs don't want to talk to us. And if they do, they're checking with the premier's office to see what the line is. Things started to be controlled by the center, the premier's office, under essentially Peterson. And it's just gotten worse ever since. That now, you know, any messaging that comes out has been approved by the premier's office and their message handlers, so to speak.
Yeah, it's definitely been an interesting time to be at Queen's Park. And Randy, we appreciate all the work you do there for us and appreciate your insights today. Thank you so much for sitting with us. Appreciate it.
Yeah, it was good. It was good to be here, Louis. Thank you.
Awesome. No problem. That is Randy Rath. He is the Queen's Park producer for us here at CHCH, a longtime steward there at Queen's Park, and we appreciate his insights today, just like we appreciate you joining us here on CHCH Podcast. And hey, however you found us, make sure you like and subscribe so you never miss an episode of this show or any of the other great shows we have for you, including Sportsline with Bubba O'Neill. You can catch that every Tuesday to Friday. You can also catch a new episode of the Trending Now podcast every Friday as well. My thanks to Mike Corson for directing today's show. My thanks to Chantel Grillo for rolling the prompter as well. Great job, Chantel. And thank you from all of us here at CHCH. Have a great day.